Welcome to the Best Science Medicine Podcast, BS without the BS.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 388th episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I'm a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of British Columbia.
I'm Mike Allen. I'm a family doctor, and I am a director of program and practice support at the College of Family Physicians of Canada and a professor at the University of Alberta and dad. Now, James, 388.
Hard to believe.
It felt like a couple thousand now, but yeah. It's only 388. That's not bad.
Yeah.
And to commemorate this moment, in the room with us today, we have Adrian Lindblad.
Thank you.
Who is also a dad, a mom.
Yeah.
A mom dad?
Really just a mom, but yeah. Yes.
We've had Adrian on the podcast many times, and she does a great job with deciphering some of the evidence. And we're going to be talking about a topic that I'm almost positive we've never talked about before.
So I went up to Adrian and I said, Adrian, you seem to have a real affinity for alcohol. Maybe you should do a podcast on it. And so anyway, this is what you get.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Mike, because actually I believe when I approached you with this topic, you had some very choice words about it that were not positive.
That will be, actually, we're going to do another podcast after this with you as well. And that was a similar reaction, but for a different reason. Yeah. Well, obviously this was a surprise to me. And I think it's a surprise. It'll be a surprise to many of you. But The question you were asking was, can inhaled isopropyl alcohol be used to treat nausea and vomiting? And this was mostly done in the emergency department, mm-hmm. but I guess it could be done elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So, first of all, tell us, you know,
why? Just why?
Why did you choose to do it? Why did you think of this research? And then, who was the first person to say, sniff this? it's a very curious, I'm just wondering about the origins here.
Yeah, so basically this came out just when a new RCT had come out on one of those email blasts from a journal. I don't know if it was Journal Watch or which one. And I went, oh my goodness, this is absolutely fascinating. What a simple intervention for someone. But I had the same opinion. I'm like, who thought, hey, you know what, let's take an alcohol prep pad, open it up and smell it, and see what happens to people. But that's actually exactly what was done. And this idea started actually in post-op patients, where it was used first. And for whatever reason, some surgeons found, hey, you know what, this works. And somehow it's spread out now, looking at it in Emerge.
All right.
Yeah, kind of a little story.
So actual RCTs.
So we actually have RCTs on this, that's right. So we really have two RCTs. They're both blinded, done in the emergency department. One was a little bit bigger than the other, and that's the one I think we'll probably spend the most time talking about. It was about 122 patients. They were not pregnant, they were young, mean age was about 31, so relatively healthy. But there are patients who are presenting to Emerge with mild, moderate nausea and vomiting, and this meant they had, it was about a severity of about 3 or more on a 10-point scale. Most of these patients had infectious gastroenteritis, and they did not require IV access. So they weren't dehydrated. Like I said, it was fairly mild to moderate. And then what they did is they randomized these patients to two different groups. They had inhaled isopropyl alcohol, which is, the alcohol prep pad, ondansetron, or both, with matching placebos. And they actually tried to do some really good things here. So as you can imagine, isopropyl alcohol doesn't smell very good. Maybe some people think it smells good. I don't think it smells very good. But they actually tried to maintain blinding in some interesting ways. So, for example, when they had the patients open the prep pad or the saline pad, they had it opened at arm's length away to try and prevent that initial overwhelming mm-hmm. odor. Mm-hmm. And they told the patients not to discuss the smell or anything with the patients who were clinicians who were caring for them, to try and maintain blinding as best as you can with something that really, really stinks.
How do you really feel about it?
Yeah. I should be more honest. Yeah. So they held these prep pads about a centimeter or two below the nares and just told them to inhale deeply as required until the nausea went away. And this was kind of a bit of an aside, but we often have to email authors to get additional information on studies. And for whatever reason, people never reply to me. Everyone else in our group seems to get replies. This is one of the first times I ever had an author actually reply to some questions for me, which was really, really, really exciting for me that I wasn't being completely ignored. I'm so used to that at the office.
Yeah. I didn't know you were noticing.
Yeah, I noticed. Yeah, thanks, Mike. So what they did is they looked at a nausea score. So they looked at it about 30 minutes. And from a baseline of about 50 for nausea on a 100-point scale, nausea decreased down to 40 with ondansetron, and it went down to 20 with inhaled isopropyl alcohol. So kind of the opposite of what I thought. I always kind of thought ondansetron probably maybe one of our better drugs, but the inhaled isopropyl alcohol did a lot better than the ondansetron group did.
And I think you're right. What you say is when you talk about, you know, what drugs are most effective for nausea vomiting, the ondansetron type agents usually come, you know, to the forefront, certainly for things, you know, in chemotherapy and so on, and those sorts of nausea vomiting things. They seem to do better than the drugs that we've used, you know, previously.
Mm-hmm. You think so? Absolutely. That's kind of what we thought too. Yeah. So that was kind of interesting. It didn't seem to matter if you had added the ondansetron to the isopropyl alcohol or not. It was that isopropyl alcohol group that had the largest reduction in the nausea score. They looked at a number of other outcomes as well. They looked at patient satisfaction on a 100-point scale. In this case, the lower score, more satisfied. It was about 20 for the inhaled isopropyl alcohol group versus 44 for ondansetron. So not only did it work good, patients seemed to like it, which again, I was a little surprised about.
Which is unusual here. The lower score was the more satisfied. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I reviewed this and I'm still surprised when you say it now. So yeah,
absolutely. They also found a trend to fewer rescue antiemetics needed with the isopropyl alcohol group. About 26% of patients needed them compared to 45%.
When you say trend, Mike and I have talked about the word trend. It was probably because it was not quite statistically significantly different, I would imagine. Yeah.
Exactly. It was only 120 patients. This was a secondary outcome.
Yeah.
But when you look at the numbers of 26% versus 45%, it definitely felt there was something there in the confidence intervals. I can't remember what they were off the top of my head, but they looked.
But at least when you don't have statistically significant differences, it is, you know, it's a value to at least look at, is it going in the right direction? And you can't argue that it's going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And so if this is real, it's a number needed to treat of about 6, which is pretty cool.
And that's above ondansetron.
Yes.
Yes.
Which is that, you know, that you got to love people who do these trials. I mean, there's not a big market for isopropyl alcohol. And what they did is they chose as good a standard as you could to see if they were better. I mean, they didn't just go ahead and, you know, maybe use some diamond hydronate or gravol or something for nausea and or you know, or any of the sort of the antipsychotic medications that we've used in the past. They went with the gold standard, so good for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They also looked at things like length of stay in the emerge department, vomiting rates, and they found no difference in those things. Again, these were people with fairly mild, moderate nausea vomiting, so might not have had too much vomiting there. There were no adverse effects reported in this study. I'm not sure what they would find on such a short-term outcome, but there didn't seem to be any problems with it. Of course, there's always limitations to every study. One of them, of course, is the blinding that I mentioned before. So about 60% of patients were able to tell that they were on inhaled isopropyl alcohol, which makes sense. The provider and investigator, they did, again, try to maintain some blinding there, and they did only about 20% of them at the time were they able to correctly identify what the patients were on. So I thought that was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. It was also a single center military hospital, like I said, a younger patient population, but a really interesting, very cheap intervention and kind of a relatively easy study to do.
And the only thing I might say is that, I mean, did they only look at 30 minutes? Is that what they looked for? Because I don't know how quickly ondansetron is supposed to work.
That's an issue, yeah. And I don't believe in this one that they looked at any other time points, and that's always been kind of a criticism. Mm-hmm. These patients definitely got oral ondansetron because they did not have any IV access.
Right.
And that's definitely been a criticism. But in other case, it did work quickly. If we waited longer, would have we seen a benefit? I can't comment
on that.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't matter, because, I mean, I'd have been thrilled to see this study versus placebo.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
Which we have a smaller version of. A study versus placebo. So we have another RCT. It was about 84 patients randomized to just a saline soaked pad or the isopropyl alcohol pad. This was a much smaller study. The baseline nausea score was 6 out of 10, and they only looked at outcomes at 10 minutes. So what they found at 10 minutes is that the nausea scores were lower with the isopropyl alcohol at about 3 compared to staying at 6 for placebo. And once again, they found improved patient satisfaction. In this case, it was sort of the opposite. This time it was a score out of 5, where the higher number is more satisfied. In this case, patient satisfaction was 2 for people on placebo versus 4 for people on the isopropyl alcohol. And again, no difference in number receiving antiemetics or serious adverse effects. They didn't look at short-term adverse effects, but they didn't see any serious adverse effects after a 10-minute study. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
And actually, that's kind of, I mean, it's great that you'd want something to work, you know, by the inhaled route, because it would work quickly and you don't have to mm-hmm. have IV access and all that sort of stuff. So it's got the usefulness of potentially working, relatively speaking, right away. Mm-hmm. And it actually has, you know, like an effect, and it's inexpensive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So if you compare ondansetron, which costs maybe, what, $4 a tablet. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the cost of an alcohol prep pad is, but I'm guessing it's significantly less than $4 a tablet.
I would say that you could probably get at least 3,000 of them for that.
Something along those lines. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it's interesting because I personally have some experience with this.
You do?
Yeah, I didn't know. But like working with James, I find quite nauseating. Mm-hmm. And what I'll do afterwards is pour myself some scotch. That's one of the things I do.
Yeah,
and I find that quite relieving. Yeah.
Excellent.
That's
and actually, if you've ever seen Mike and I present together, he constantly walks around with an isopropyl alcohol pad, you know, taped to below his nose. It's weird.
Yeah.
I didn't know that's why you were doing it, Mike. I thought maybe you had a little bit of an infection.
Yeah. A lip infection.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. For 10 years.
We're going way down that road now.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, so that's really cool information. Now, again, it is only 2 studies, but you know, well designed and relatively speaking, as well as you can design these sorts of trials. So, what's the rest of the context?
We want to kind of see how well do any other pharmacologic agents actually work for nausea and eMERGE. Mm-hmm. My co-author Kevin Harris is an eMERGE physician. And he always just kind of referred to ondansetron as his favorite torsades inducing agent. Mm-hmm. You know, his favorite thing to use for that doesn't seem to work really great in eMERGE from his experience. And so we found a Cochrane review from a couple of years ago now looking at different agents. It looked at Maxran, or metoclopramide, pardon me, ondansetron, prochlorperazine, promethazine. And none of those were actually significantly different from placebo at 30 minutes. So again, there's that 30-minute outcome that we're looking at, but on a 100-point scale, they're only maybe around 5 points different from placebo. Droperidol did have a little bit of a benefit, but it's only one randomized control study of 49 patients. So it's kind of hard to say droperidol is the be all and end all there. But yeah, it doesn't look like, basically treating nausea and eMERGE is pretty tricky. So it's nice to have something simple that seemed to work.
Yeah.
The other thing that we looked at was just, as I mentioned before, this was kind of initially studied in post-op patients. And there was a systematic review of 4 randomized control trials, about 200 patients using this for post-op nausea. Mm-hmm. And actually, the results weren't super clear and consistent, but it did seem that fewer patients required rescue antiemetics versus standard therapy at 26% versus 39%. That's a number needed to treat of about 8. Excuse me. And they didn't report adverse events, unfortunately.
But that's not. I mean, when we use antiemetics, we don't get everybody responding by any stretch of the imagination.
Absolutely not. And what I found fascinating about the systematic review is actually a systematic review of aromatherapy.
Oh,
yes. Okay. Yes. That's so that was a little learning point for me when doing a search strategy, was include isopropyl alcohol as aromatherapy. Maybe not as nice as lavender, but, you know, it's in there.
Yeah. It's interesting because, I mean, up front and in any of the papers, do they talk about why they think it works, or was there anything like, no one really cares because it does work, but it would be just an interesting, because if I had to guess, I'd say having smelling that might even make you feel more nauseous, but apparently not.
Apparently not. No, and I don't know what the mechanism was either.
Yeah,
I think I've listened to you guys too long, and I just kind of ignored all of that.
Yeah.
But it is an excellent question.
Yeah. But is this something that you would now think about potentially using based on this evidence?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds impressive to me, especially when, yeah. I mean, what have you got to lose? I mean, it's an immediate sort of thing you can try. I mean, it'd be interesting to know what people would think of you recommending it.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, patients, the patient satisfaction scores was always very positive.
Yeah.
So they seem to like it.
Yeah.
No, and they would, if you look at the research around, for example, knees, people like the idea of a topical more than they do a pill. And I think this, people would love this. They're not really doing anything. They're not taking a medicine, you know, and as we mentioned, they didn't measure the adverse events, but you can imagine it would be an irritation to your nose, that kind of thing, which would all be very brief. I can't see that it would have a lot of serious consequences.
No.
I just quickly looked up the price, and it's about, it's just a little around 20 to 25 pads for a dollar.
Yeah, so 4 cents.
A little, so we're talking a little bit cheaper than 4 cents versus $4 a tablet. Now, you probably have to use a couple different swabs, but that would skyrocket the price to somewhere between 8 and 16 cents, I would guess.
And I would bet that if you're in a hospital setting where they buy 5 million of these,
you get them a slightly lower price.
You might get a slightly better price on them.
I hope so.
Who knows the way hospitals buy things? It's kind of like NASA buying toilet paper for the shuttle.
Yeah, it does seem
$48 for a roll.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that was per sheet. But yeah, no. This is one of those really cool studies that, you know, it seems such a simple thing to be able to do and get an effect. And that's why I'm sure that's when you saw that, Adrian, that's why you kind of jumped on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Cheap, easy, relatively well-designed study. So
yeah. So if, and what would be interesting would be to know what it's like in other forms of nausea and vomiting. I mean, is this something that one could use at home? I would avoid it in children because one, we don't probably have any studies of children, but what an interesting thing to use if, you know, just for yourself, because I'm pretty sure these pads are not, you don't require a prescription.
I'm pretty sure.
No, you can buy them just straight out of Shoppers Drug Mart.
It's an
interesting idea and consistently not studied in pregnancy.
Consistently, yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
So a bit of a question mark there, where we're constantly looking for better treatments for nausea and vomiting. Because not much works great.
Yeah.
We certainly can't advocate it because God knows what kind of harms could be generated with that.
Especially because that's not, like, if you're looking at someone who's got an infectious gastroenteritis, it's a pretty short-lived condition, whereas vomiting pregnancy, much longer.
Well, although, and again, like, none of us are recommending it, but if you had to go, is it, you know, taking something orally versus just in a little bit of an inhaled isopropyl alcohol, if I had to guess which one would have more potential toxicity, I'd probably go with an oral agent. But like I say, there's no evidence, but I think it would be an interesting trial to try it. I think you could convince an ethics board to agree to it because it seems like it should be relatively not toxic to the fetus, or however, you know, it depends on what stage of pregnancy, I guess.
It is a fetus that's in there, James.
No, I know, but
it's not a dinosaur.
No, I was going to say where do you, there are words that are chosen to describe.
I don't know. Yes,
and I'm trying to be politically correct, but as usual, Mike, you don't let me be.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, you were on an ethics board for a number of years.
Well, yeah, they wanted a, you know, a converse opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is, you know, I'm unethical, so they thought I'd be a good
you were the perfect addition.
No, it's fine. And you know, again, it's all about making sure that people are sufficiently informed, and I think one could get that by an ethics board if you did it properly. So anything else you want to add to this, Mike or Adrian?
Nope.
So I think we'll just leave it at that, and I hope you guys got some useful information from it. We would love to hear about it if you've had any experience with using it, and if you, based on this, start using it and you have some success, it would be great to hear from you about that. Mike, the course in Alberta is coming up when?
Adrian, when's the course coming up?
October.
There you go.
Yeah. Is there anything on the website yet about it?
No, I don't think so. It's just about ready. We've got all the topics picked and the titles and everything like that. We have confirmed, and it's just Sharon is going to be posting that. She's just waiting for final review, and then it's going to be posted.
Yep, cool. Exciting stuff.
So I think we'll just leave it at that. So thanks as always for listening.
Talk to you later.
Bye.